start with our meeting. We will start first with the introduction and then apologies. Starting with the introduction, my name is Mandla Khai. Khai spelled out A-Y-I. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Honorable Makoe.
I'm Eddie Makoe, and I represent the province of Papua. Honorable Papa.
Thank you, Chief. My name is Willem Faber. I represent the Northern Cape province.
Good morning, Minister, colleagues. My name is Busum Zimagwebo from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bumotan Tedo from the Northwest.
Avishini Vitoni Brenda Makiwula, Loma Alipopo province.
Good morning. My name is Jacques Lund and I'm here from the Western Cape.
Apologies from my side. They will be joined by Honorable Kekal, who is the House Chairperson responsible for international relations. And Mr. Introduction.
Good morning, Chairperson, and morning to colleagues. Jeremy Fredden, Deputy Minister of Public Works.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Yehob Maroa, Public Works.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Cox Mokoro. I'm the Deputy Chief Finance Officer.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Stanley Anderson. I'm the DG for the Expanded Public Works Program.
And good morning, Chair. My name is Devon Pallet from the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair. I'm George Murumela from DTW, Office of the Minister.
Morning, Chair. I'm Sarah Romali from the Office of the Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Florence Rapada, Policy Research and Regulation, Public Works.
Morning, Chair. My name is Heinz Borst, Property Management Trading Entity in Public Works.
Morning, Chair. My name is Aaron Mazibuko, Finance, Public Works.
Morning, Chair. My name is Mandra, Public Works.
Morning, Chair. My name is Margot Dover from Public Works.
Morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is MBK Nanker from the Planning Unit of the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Dagaran Mwena. I'm from Public Works Service Planning Unit.
Good morning, members of the committee. MTR Spazel, I'm the DDG for Governance.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Luke Mufushuba. I'm the conduct advisor of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Luke Mufushuba. I'm the conduct advisor.
Good morning. I'm the Fair Assistant Parliament.
Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain, PMG.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chibekam Tulele, Committee Section, Parliament.
Thank you very much. There's an apology from Advocate Sam Pokela, Director General of the Department. He's a hero, so he's unable to attend. Also for the whole week, for Paul Garrison, I decided to come. I think we should start and over to you, Minister, and, for the table of the annual performance plan and the budget.
Thanks, Jefferson. The Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, and the Honourable Members of the Select Committee. Of course.
Maroha. Thank you for the opportunity to address the comment. I should have put an apology. I'm from the cabinet. There are issues which must be part of. Maybe after about 30 minutes to an hour, once we've started, I'll have to go back then. Chairperson, let me just assure the members that I've always said I take a very serious oversight role of Parliament and, of course, the committee and the need to keep us as ministers together with our officials and entities accountable. Because this is at the very heart of the democracy or democratic process. Well, I'll be asking the officials to present the details of the APP and Umtiaz Faiz will be leading that. But with your permission, let me, I would like to take the opportunity just to share with the committee what we call the broad vision for the remaining period of the administration. And I think that must be emphasized, Chairperson. We're talking about the remaining period, which is just about a year, 14 months or so, if not less. When we launched the turnaround in 2012, we said it was based on zero tolerance of corruption and improving the way we do the business. And at the core of improving that business, or the way we do business as public works, is the ring fencing of the full operationalization of the property management trade entity to optimally manage the state massive property portfolio, which we have said, and we put this number because we want the colleagues, we want the honorable members and comrades to appreciate the magnitude of this portfolio, the over 90,000 buildings on 30,000 land parcels under the custodianship of the National Department of Public Works. This has to be done in order to amongst others, to add and maintain the value of the state assets, to create revenue by leasing out to the private sector where appropriate. And I've said, if you look around, dilapidated building, open spaces, in any dorp, in any town or city, it's normally the public works property, government property. And those assets are dead assets, because if an asset is not utilized, it just becomes a liability to government. You pay a lot of rates, a lot of other things and so on, but it's not utilized. But you might have also noticed that we are leasing from the private sector a lot of buildings, but our buildings are standing empty. We're not saving the money. So also it's necessary, therefore, in order to properly maintain the state facilities on behalf of the Frontline Service Delivery Department, that we enhance the public access in those buildings. And the PMTE also needs to identify excess land for land reform and social housing. This is a big debate. That includes the student accommodation. If you care to know, most of the universities cannot accommodate more than 40% of their student population. Just one example, I know that Nelson Mandela, they are registered, they are having about 18,000. That was the last year's figure. But they couldn't accommodate even more than 3,000. So which means the others are somewhere in town, in the townships, very wrong conditions. But we have lots of buildings which are underutilized, which we could turn them into for student accommodation. And that process, we will present it in Parliament at the right time, because we're working with the higher education to look into the formula. And in that process, we must also develop skills, create employment, and provide empowerment opportunities. By developing skills, talking about telling our public works officials to give them property skills through some training courses we're having. Deputy Minister, let me post once in the select committee. First man, this man, as a finance person, but has just acquired a master's degree in property with the University of Victoria. We've registered a lot of them in some diploma, because you need special skills to run the property. But it's going to be a slow process, but it's a necessary process if we have to be serious. So that's what we mean by developing the skills. Because public works was run in terms of the general skills with a lot of administrators rather than property and construction people, the built environment. But what you do with those thousands, you will have to build your own chamber, you will have to retrain them. You can't talk about mass retrenchment. So we're also talking about those employment opportunities, but also empowerment opportunities. When we're talking about changing those buildings into social housing, how do we bring the disadvantaged, the youth, the disabled, the women, and the black people in general to have the opportunities for empowerment in the property industry, which was closed to them. And also talk to the different finance institutions to be able to help them to have businesses in that area. So the establishment of the property management training is a decision of cabinet. And as recently as November last year, cabinet called on the public works to redouble its efforts to operationalize this entity. It's ring-fenced in 2018 summer, and even in the budget speech, and the president is heavily committed to this project. And when he reappointed me to public works, president was, I don't think, was doing any favor. He made it very clear that I must drive that PMT. It was very clear. By the way, public works is nothing else separate from member. It's construction and property. Then you add EPWP. That's what public works is all about. It's a highly specialized department. And many people think that it's just a general department. So the ring fencing of the core business of the property management trade entity also provides the space for the main board, the Department of Public Works, to focus on the core mandate. The core mandate is for us to regulate and transform the built environment. And regulating and transforming it means lots of things. The built environment, various professional groupings with their associations are under us. We have to regulate them in terms of the different legislations and so on. And amongst others, this includes, we must give full effect to GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, and implementing facilities management norms for the public sector, and provide policy leadership to the wider construction and the property sectors, working closely with the entities of public works and the charter council. And must also work with the council for the built environment to open up the skills pipeline for scarce skills in the built environment in a way which better reflects the demographics of the country, of course, by race, gender, class, and disability. And also coordinating and providing support, guidelines, and norms and standards to the wider public works family, particularly in the provinces, as well as reprioritizing EPWP. This program is a very important program in terms of the relief it gives when it comes to the issues of job opportunities, not only to provide work opportunities, but also a space for training and to improve the security and the facilities in the poor communities. You know, Chair, I guess you have been confronted with this. Those who are from either Eastern Cape or Northern Cape, I suspect Limpopo, every time when people see a road which is not properly maintained, they say, where's public works? Oh, they think that is our mandate. The reason is because the reconfiguration in the provinces, it's roads and public works, most of them. Whereas nationally, it doesn't belong to us. But I think it speaks to one thing. Whilst we might want to deny that it's not our responsibility, people do not see different departments. People see government. The issue of coordination. Sometimes what public works does at provincial level and what we do at the national level tends to be different. And the tendency is to want to hide behind the constitutional mandate and different spheres of government. People do not care about spheres of government. They just want service delivered. As to who is responsible for what. But I think it's worse when it's us who cannot be able to cooperate as public works, family as a whole. So that's one of the challenges we have to deal with. Yesterday there was a very nice debate in the portfolio committee of public works about who's responsible for what. We were saying we're not responsible. But some of the questions which we received are questions about what provinces are doing. But they have their own MECs, and MECs report to the Premier and so on. But we suggested that sometimes when you want to quiz us on certain issues which are happening in the provinces, you must call us collectively so that the provinces can also answer those who are responsible for doing things. We don't come and say, no, it's not us, it's the responsibility of the province. Let's be together so that they can answer for themselves. So for both PMTE, at the heart of many of these processes, I've alluded that they will be with the policy branch. It's clear it's about the task for this year, the issue of the policy branch, to review the various, the existing white papers. There are 97 and 99 in order to refresh and clarify the mandates, the roles and responsibilities of the department and the entity. That will also talk to what I've just talked about to the provinces. So for both the PMTE and the main vote, that is what I'm talking about when I say we have to improve the way we do business. So as the presentations will be made, you'll have a very clear distinction of what is PMTE and what is the main vote public works. And in response to the cabinet mandate of 2005, by the way, on the issue of zero tolerance on corruption, I mentioned that there was a second pillar of the turnaround, which was the zero tolerance of fraud and corruption. And I've said we'll be shortly announcing jointly with the SIU some of the successful outcomes of the investigations we started some years ago, as well as the discipline. But the issue is not just to catch the wrongdoers, the issue is to prevent that some of the things do not happen. That's why we have this branch headed by the CDG on the government. So public works faces a major problem with collusion and corruption. Many tenders there, big tenders. This demoralizes the majority of the honest, hardworking public servants and robs the country of the resources and undermines delivery. And in line with the government commitment to fight corruption, we're trying to substitute the road to us. But sometimes the process, the wheels of justice is very slow and processes do not depend on us. You won't believe that cases which we think that we concluded as early as 2014, people are still trying to make appeals. I left and I came back. Now I realize that people are still trying to make appeals. So that's how justice works in the country. On prestige, this is the final matter, which includes the villages, the ministerial houses. I'm painfully aware that when I meet with the MPs, I'm not only meeting with the colleagues, I'm also meeting with the clients. And I've said to the PMT that as they develop the facilities management, those systems, prestige must be a priority. Three actions need to happen urgently. The activation of the prestige call line, the infrastructure for which is already in place. We are working with the National Treasurer to establish a panel of service providers for prestige matters, because this can't be taken into the normal processes of supply chain. You need a very, very quick response to deal with some of the issues. And the current one-size-fits-all public service model is not working. Because if you have something which has to be repaired in a house, somebody is staying there, you're not going to wait for all those processes. It must be done immediately. And let me concretely list the current projects and plans as they pertain to ministers, I mean to MPs. In relation to the villages, the rollout of the Wi-Fi optic cable infrastructure for the internet access to all the three parliamentary villages. But Honorable Faber, you must know that we are committing to facilitating the Wi-Fi infrastructure, not unlimited free data. You must underline that one. We don't have the budget for that, but we hope the Parliament will have the budget for that, because you are a responsibility of also of Parliament. We put the infrastructure. But this is a very important thing for the members to be able to work when they are in their villages and so on. And I think that's a matter you need to fight for. And I know, Honorable Father, that you have been very consistent in the meeting representing your village, but other people are lackluster. Other people hardly attend meetings. And Chairperson, you must know that. The fault lines when it comes to the village board, it's members who do not attend. It's not about us. And Honorable Faber will agree with me, he's always there to represent the people. To further improve the security of the parliamentary villages, linking the alarm systems to the Rondebosch police station, implementing a phased approach to refurbish the MP's units. You know that we had started with those renovations, but there's still more. Phase one will target these prefabricated units. Longer-term plans about parliamentary villages are under discussion with Parliament. But something very interesting, Deputy Minister, was what came from the Speaker yesterday, the issue about Parliament putting up a committee to do the socio-economic impact. I suspect that we will have to deal with that matter in a constructive way. Because we had set up a committee. We had started a process as the Department of Public Works. So to have a duplication and parallel processes might be a problem. If you do just be a waste of the resources, it might be important that we collapse those processes together. And my understanding is that Parliament has to request the service provider to do, or has to request the department which is responsible, rather than looking for its own construction and so on. That's my understanding. But it's a matter which we will put into you. But it will be good that we collapse those two processes, rather than having separate processes and parallel processes. That would be a waste of resources. So in conclusion, I thought it was important to inform the committee where we're coming from and what our priorities are. And this will, of course, not change the ATP, but this will be reflected in the operational plans of the various branches. And thank you. And we're looking forward to this fruitful engagement with the committee. And then I can hand over now to the person who's going to lead the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Chairperson and members of the committee, just to give you a particular context. I'll be presenting with my colleagues the annual performance plans for the fiscal period commencing April 2018 and ending March 2019 for both the main vote for DPW as well as the property management training entity. Just to give you the strategic context and our delivery value chain, the Minister also referred to this in his address, that we have two distinct plans dealing with two distinct mandates or sets of mandates. So one is DPW, which deals with the policy and regulation of the property and construction industry, with EPWP, with intergovernmental coordination and our prestige functions, and those are located in DPW. And then we have a ring-fenced property business, which is undertaken by our property management training entity. And in between somewhere, even though we're not dealing with it today, we have four public entities, the IDT, the Construction Industry Development Board, the Council for the Built Environment, and AgriMod South Africa, which are dealt with separately. Chairperson, we see our service beneficiaries as mainly national government departments and entities that use the department to provide and maintain their accommodation requirements. We call them user departments. We also see as service beneficiaries the both environmental consultants and contractors that are contracted to provide a service to the department and its clients, emerging contractors who benefit from the department's empowerment programs, municipalities, provinces, and state-owned enterprises that receive support in the implementation of the Extended Public Works Program, private landlords who enter into lease agreements with the department for leasing of buildings to provide accommodation to client departments to deliver services to the public, and finally the construction and property sectors. Chairperson and members of the committee, this is how we structure ourselves from a programmatic point of view within the department. On the left, we have five programs for the department: the administration program, the intergovernmental coordination program. It also includes a professional services program to deal with the skills pipeline, the extended public works program, the property and construction industry policy and research, that's our policy function, where we regulate the respective sectors, and finally, the prestige policy function. In the PMTE, we have five programs which deal with the relevant areas within the PMTE's business, and at the center of more importance, we have what we call shared services. These shared services provide the administrative support to both the main vote as well as the PMTE. Chairperson, moving on to the next slide, I want to assure the committee that the department has prepared their plans in compliance with the relevant planning framework established by government. We've been audited by the Auditor General as well as been reviewed by the DPME, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. We have also prepared our plans with due cognizance of the fact that our economy is in a particular challenging environment with resource constraints and the country in a similar manner. And accordingly, we then prioritize our budget to ensure we are able to deliver on our mandate within these budgetary constraints. The priorities that have informed the APP for the Department of Public Works include providing work opportunities and income support to the poor and unemployed people, transforming the construction and property sectors, skills development, improving the governance of public entities and professional councils, combating fraud and corruption, as well as initiating cost savings initiatives. Chairperson and members of the committee, these are the highlights of the plan as a whole before we present the details. From a work opportunity point of view, in the year ahead, we'll be endeavoring to accelerate the achievement of the 5-year target in the Extended Public Works Program, as this is the last year of the 5 years for the EPWP to reach our target of 6.378 million work opportunities. We'll also be engaging with the Department of Corporate Governance to ensure the reporting of projects funded by the Municipal Infrastructure Grant and to ensure the reporting of all participants in the Community Work Program. We do have a challenge when it comes to the completeness of reporting of work opportunities. We'll also be leveraging project sites, site visits to improve compliance across all spheres of government. And finally, we'll also be embracing the preferential procurement regulation of 2017, which took effect on the 1st of April 2017. From a transformation point of view, we'll be focusing on reviewing our white papers with a view to reposition the department as a champion for growth of the property and construction industry. We'll be reviewing both the Construction Industry and Development Board Act, as well as the Council for the Built Environment Act, together with the Act establishing the 6th Professional Council to provide leadership towards meaningful transformation of the world environment. We'll also be reviewing the Expropriation Act. We'll be building capacity in line with the World Environment Skills Pipeline Program and also partnering with relevant stakeholders such as the Department of Higher Education and Training and engaging in MOUs for that particular purpose. The Minister touched on this in his opening address. From a construction, from a fraud and corruption point of view, we have spent the last few years emphasizing quite strongly on investigating wrongdoing. Moving forward, we'll be doing that, and we'll also be evolving our strategy towards prevention and reducing the quantum of fraud risk in the department with greater internal controls, especially with with a focus on leasing in and construction project management. We will be also achieving greater alignment with law enforcement agencies to emphasize criminal prosecution and civil recovery. We are making progress with civil recovery. There's a lot of work to do with respect to success with regard to criminal prosecution. We'll also focus our investigations on high-risk areas in the year ahead, on areas that are called emergency maintenance, where we find there's a high risk of fraud and corruption. And we'll also be embedding anti-corruption initiatives throughout the department in the year ahead. Improving governance, we'll be developing an administrative model for the public works sector to ensure seamless delivery between provinces, municipalities, public entities, and the public works department. We'll be implementing a service delivery improvement program in areas of weakness, and also we'll be dealing with various enablers and systems and processes to ensure we develop the necessary foundation to support more efficient service delivery in the year ahead. Chairperson, this is year four of year five of our strategic plan, so we are thinking in terms of achieving our five-year goals and objectives. So it's an important year for us as we reach the end of the five-year period ending March 2020. Chair, I just take the hand over to my colleague, Takalani Moila. She will take us through the detailed APP for TPW.
In this current financial year, the department will be focusing on the following, starting with the strategic overview, which is on part A of the APP, and the department's constitutional mandate is provided in Schedule 4, part A of the Constitution, and the legislative mandate of the department are below, and the policy mandates are the following: the DPW white papers, the construction sector transformation charter, property sector transformation charter, the DPW broad-based black empowerment strategy, the property management strategy on BEE, job creation, poverty alleviation, and the last one, green building framework. The next slide shows the strategic overview, which highlights the vision of the department, which in the 2018-19 APP, it has not changed, and it reads convenient access to dignified public services. The vision and mission has also not changed. The values are the following: innovation, integrity, motivation, professionalism, accountability, result-oriented, and teamwork. The department contributes to the following outcomes: outcome 4, outcome 5, and lastly, outcome 13. In this current financial year, the department will review the following legislations and policies: the expropriation bill, which was passed by Parliament in 2016 and has yet to be finalized. The department is also processing the draft Public Works General Laws Amendments and Repeal Bill. And the next one is the review of the department's white papers, which we are looking at the 1997 and also 1999 white papers. The department will also review the concept for the Built Environment Act, and the last one will be the review of the CIDB Act, which takes into consideration the need to strengthen the regulatory and developmental role of the CIDB. In terms of the external environment of the APP, we have looked at the following areas: the economic overview, which looks at the high government debt and also the GDP, and also looked at the labor market overview, and the overview of the built environment professions, the overview of the construction sector, supplier market overview, which looks at the contractor registers as well as the registration of different areas of the built environment. And then the next area also that we have looked in terms of the external environment influencing our service delivery are as follows: providing work opportunities and income support to poor and unemployed people through the labor-intensive delivery of public and community assets and services,
We've also looked at the transformation in the construction and property sector. We've also looked at the skills development in the construction and property sector and the improving governance of entities and professional councils, which we said it is key in developing an administrative model for the sector, and also looking at the cost containment and value for money. On this area, we're looking at implementation of the National Treasury G-Governance Platform for Procurement and also transversal contracts, as well as the Sita Buyer Portal. Then, in terms of the internal environment of the APP, we have looked at the following areas, which we want to show the improvements in terms of our internal policies, the processes and systems to ensure that there is enabling context in this place. The first one will be which we are looking in terms of the business improvement projects are in terms of reduction in fraud and corruption, which the Minister has also alluded to, the service delivery improvement plan, the change management strategy and change management plans, which will facilitate the readiness and to support the stakeholders during the operationalization of the department and the PMTE. We're also looking at the internal policies and processes. In this area, we have identified various key areas to better manage the function. And the first one, we are looking at the new digital enterprise strategy and enterprise strategy that the Department of Public Works as a sector will be focusing mainly on. And the department is also looking at implementing a strategic management system and the payment monitoring system, the EPW recruitment guidelines, and the EPW SOPs to inform the public bodies on the compliance requirements of the of implementing the EPWP projects. And lastly, we're also looking at the professional services branch, which will be introducing a business process systems and also the supply chain processes that are currently underway together with all delegations, directives, and circulars. And the integrity management frameworks, which will be implemented in phases commencing in the 2018-19 financial year. And we are also looking at the governance frameworks, which will direct how the department will apply the corporate governance principles as a guide by the PFMA. And then we'll also look at the framework for the oversight of the public entities, which will provide guidance on how entities are expected to provide increased shareholder value and also maximize the social political benefits in line with government priorities. We're also going to look at the compliance framework, which will provide the sense of assurance to the accounting officer. We'll also look at the review, what the department will review in terms of the communication implementations to better manage the and support the ministerial public participation program. In terms of the performance environment, which we have highlighted in the APP, we also took note that the auditor generals all the audit outcomes and the progress made by the department towards their 5-year strategic goals. We came up with 14 strategic interventions and are identified below. We are looking at the following: improving compliance to protocol agreements, integrated grant agreements and ministerial determination, improve the reporting of work opportunities by public bodies incorporating EPWP principles, adherence of the ministerial determination by public bodies, improve coordination of EPWP through the national coordinator committees, strengthening the department's research and policy development capacity, enhancing institutional capacity through the skills development program, improvements in the delivery of services to prestige clients, strengthening the oversight of the public works sector, improvement in the management practice. In this case, we are looking at the improvements in terms of the scores of the MPET. Reducing fraud and corruption, also reducing irregular expenditures, and we're also looking at the payments of suppliers within 30 days, and also reducing the number of litigation cases against the department.
Sorry, second. I'll suggest that I'm looking at the volume of the documents. I suggest that rather than reading its point. I thought you were on this particular page when you say there are 14 strategic interventions that have been identified, and these are the following without reading each one of them.
remember that they already had the document with them that they talked to do the report.
In terms of the demand for services, we have looked at the EPWP as well as the built environment skills under the program under program 2 of professional services. These are highlighted in the next two slides, focusing on the targets as well as the areas where we have performed. The next slide talks to the organizational environment. We've looked at the rollout of the implementation of the current structure, which we have also indicated, and the factors of the organizational environment that have been involved in the, by the APP. And then the following slide is on the planning processes. And then the next slide talks to the allocation of the budget pay program and the analysis thereof. Talks to the transfers and the subsidies that the department is currently showing on the APP, and the department also makes the payment transfers to, on the for the conditional grants to the provinces as well as the municipalities. And we've also looked at the staff complements, the budget on the staff complements, the decrease thereof, which we have showed within EPWP and the contractors. And the department also has declared the savings of 28 million and also the spending also that has increased for 2020 to 2021. The next slide also shows the reduction in terms of our budget. It shows that the increase is also showed on the next slide and also the funds that have been earmarked for the next 3 years. Part B of the presentation talks to the performance indicators, program 1, 2018-19 APP looks at the following areas of the program. Under program 1, we've got the strategic objectives that talks to support service delivery in smart, proactive and business-centric manner. And on this goal, we've got two strategic objectives, one that talks to finance and supply chain, as well as combating fraud and corruption. 2018 target under the acceleration of transformation agenda, we're looking at 36 as our targets, and the change in the score as 4.0. And the next one, investigations initiated 100%. And the number of interventions recommended resulting from fraud risk management, we're looking at 2 as our target in 2018-19. And the KPI on change in the regular expenditure baseline, we're looking at 100%. And the last one, we're looking at the compliant invoices settled within 30 days, we're also looking at 100% as a target. The 2018-19 target that talks to bids awarded within 56 days, we're looking at 70%. And the quotation, we're looking at 88%, and the percentage of procurement spent for bids awarded, we're looking at 75, and also for bids awarded to designated group in lines with the preferential procurement, that we're also looking at 75% as our target for 1890. And in terms of the funded priorities, vacancies filled as the approved recruitment plan, the target for 1890, we're also looking at 100%. And the next strategic objective that talks to ITC, we're looking at developing 5 modules implemented and is highlighted below. Then the next KPI that talks to modules enhanced as per the ERP, we're looking at 4 modules. And the last one, we're looking at feasibility studies for the ERP systems as the 18-19 target. The last two KPIs that talks to legal services, we're looking at a percentage of reported fraud and corruption cases of misconduct. We're looking at 100% of target as a target, and the default judgment against the department prevented, we're looking also at 100%. The next program that we're going to look at is program 2, intergovernmental relations, and also professional services. There are 2 strategic objectives that are linked to this strategic goal. The KPI that talks to performance review reports for the sector program of action presented to sector, we're looking at 2 as a target for 18-19, and the KPI that talks to number of agreements signed for joint service delivery with IGR partners, we're looking at 15, and also the reviews conducted on the intergovernmental governance structures, we're also looking at 1 as a target for 2018. The next area talks to professional services. The KPI that talks to the number of beneficiaries participating in DPW or PMTE skills development program, we're looking at 1,100 as a target for 18-19, and the details of what constitute 1,100 is highlighted below. The KPI that talks to number of provinces with state capacity building programs in the built environment aligned to the skills pipeline, the target for 18-19 is 3. And the KPI that talks to number of schools program participating graduating matric with bachelor's pass degree, it's 30. And the bursary scheme beneficiaries, we're also looking at 30. And the National Department of Public Works establishment of the academy as a KPI, we're looking at coming up with a concept document in 1819. Then I will move into program 3. Which is EPWP. We've got 2 strategic objectives. We've got 4 strategic objectives that are aligned to this strategic goal. The KPI that talks to number of work opportunities in the EPWP, as well as the percentage of EPW participation among designated group. These are the 2 KPIs that are linked with the MTSF. The 18-19 target for KPI 1, we're looking at 1.4 as our 18-19 target. And the second one, we're looking at different areas of the youth, the women, as well as persons with disabilities. And the KPI that talks to data quality, we're looking at 2 areas for 18-19. And the KPI that talks to the number of contracted NPOs, we're looking at we've targeted 350 in 18-19. And the number of public bodies supported, we're looking at 290 public bodies that will be supported in 1819. And the number of frameworks of sector convergence approved, we're looking at approving 1 framework for 1819. Then I'll quickly move to program 4, policy and construction industry. This KPI, the KPIs below are linked to 1 strategic objective. The first KPI talks to the development of public works bills, and in 1819 we're looking at the draft public works bill submitted to Minister for gazetting. And on this KPI we're also looking at making sure that there's a review on the on the 2 white papers, which we have already made amendments within our operational plan to make sure that the process is also taken into account. The second KPI talks to the development of construction or CIDB amendment bill. We're also looking at the review of the CIDB. The next KPI also talks to CBE amendment bill. We're also going to make sure that we also, as we do this process, we also focus on the review of that bill. The next 4th KPI talks to the development of built environment professional councils, the same process that I've indicated from KPI 1 right to KPI 4 will also be taken care of. I'll quickly move to program 5, which is prestige policy. The KPI that talks to this program is highlighted there on under prestige policies approved. In 1819, we're looking at 2 prestige policies to be approved, and we're also looking at the number of planned stage events supported with movable structures. We're looking at 8 as our 1819 target, and the percentage of movable asset requests provided within 60 days. We're looking at making sure that 80% of this work is achieved in 1819, and also signed off infrastructure work list for the prestige portfolio. We're looking at 1 signed off infrastructure work list for the prestige portfolio. I will quickly move to part C, Part C covers the long-term infrastructure. This area is more mainly on showing the areas of our service delivery improvement plan. If you look at the four areas which are highlighted there, we've also tried to come up with the improvement activities. The next slide shows the risks. We've got five strategic goal risks that have been identified, and the action plans of those strategic goal risks have been developed. Then the next slide shows the conditional grants. This area mainly affects EPWP. There are four areas that are highlighted in terms of the incentives and the purpose for those transfers. The last slide speaks to the public entities reporting to the Department of Public Works, and the entities are highlighted below there. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. We finished the DPW part. Should we continue with PMP or take questions at this point in time?
No,
we continue. Thank you. Let me just swap seats. Let me just introduce the presentation for the PMTE. It's the fourth year during which we are preparing a separate plan for the PMTE as a separate entity. As the Minister made mention of the fact that we've hired it off and we're busy operationalizing, and this will be the fourth year of the preparation of this particular APP. Now, Chairperson, I just want to mention the fact that when we talk about the PMTE, we also think about the PMTE from a socio-economic development point of view. And the PMTE, to explain the context of the plan, in terms of land parcels, there are approximately 29,000 land parcels that include approximately 5.4 million hectares in terms of the asset register of the PMTE, and they include 93,000 structures of approximately 36.8 million square meters of floor space with a gross deemed cost of 139 billion rand. And the accommodation charges collected for state-owned buildings at this moment is about 4.5 billion rand per annum. And we also see that we have approximately 2,700 leases that we're leasing from the private sector, occupying 6.3 million square meters of floor space at an annual cost of 4.2 billion rand. From a construction pipeline point of view, and we can see the purchasing power of the PMTE is approximately 45 to 50 billion rand over the MTEF, and the effective optimization of the portfolio then holds great benefits and opportunities for government broader socio-economic plan and broader agenda from a service delivery transformation, job creation, and expenditure efficiency point of view. Now, by recognizing the PMTE as an important socio-economic driver, the department sees the following initiatives in the year ahead. And from an infrastructure point of view, in terms of outcome 12, providing accommodation to client departments, of course, providing accommodation to client departments means that we are able to influence the quality of service delivery at the user end. And for 2018-19, over 4 billion rand has been earmarked for infrastructure spending, that is refurbishments and capital expenditure, on 105 infrastructure projects for various user departments. They include SAP for police stations, courts, border posts, correctional facilities, and office buildings. And that, of course, will enable user departments to better deliver on their services. From a rural development point of view, we have a number of projects underway in Polokwane, Bombela, and Sakunda, and we also have five rural precincts with an estimated budget of 350 million rand earmarked for development by 2022. That's earmarked Mount Fletcher, Harwick, Carolina, Makalo, and Mutasa. Moving over to availing land for land reform and human settlement, that's also a big thing for us, as the Minister mentioned, in terms of accelerating land reform and a human settlement program. vacant land under our custodianship is being analyzed mainly for land reform and also for agricultural programs. And the presentation includes a number of areas where these are earmarked. Moving on to empowerment, all quotations, less than 500,000 rand, will be awarded to service providers with the level ratings of 1 and 2. 75% of procurement spend will be awarded to designated groups in terms of a triple PSA. 30% of new leases will be awarded to BE companies, and also they will be earmarked for the awarding of long-term leases. We now have a property management empowerment policy that was approved in January this year, and we'll be rolling it out in the year ahead. And of course, we've been opening the department significantly for empowerment purposes in terms of our spending per patent. And from an empowerment point of view as well, the property incubator program is in place, and we have a skills development initiative that is being earmarked for the year ahead, including training of staff in technical areas. From a cost-saving point of view, we're earmarking saving of 200 million rand through private leases, and we're targeting 8 million kiloliters of water savings in a year ahead. We also have a number of waste management projects that are earmarking savings there. We are also targeting 150 million kilowatt-hour saving in electricity per annum and focus the year ahead, and 65 properties will be made available to the private sector for letting for generation of electricity. Chairperson, we also have the so-called OASP, which is the Operationalization and Financial Sustainability Program. This is dedicated towards operationalizing the PMTE. And what you will see from our targets, that we'll be moving the PMTE into a different kind of operating model with a clear focus on efficiency enhancement and generating revenue and creating a sustainable property management entity with a lesser reliance on the fiscal going forward. Actually, I think what is important to note is that the user charge model for the department of the PMT in particular will change. And this will have an influence on, of course, the fiscus and the kind of cost that the user department will in future pay for a better purpose. Currently, there's a 50% deficiency in the quantum of funds required to maintain a high-quality portfolio as opposed to the current user charge quantum being paid to the department at this particular moment in time. So you will see changes, and the National Treasury will obviously have to come to the party as well. If the PMT is going to be operationalized, there ought to be a new user charge model where we recover all the costs of providing a proper service to our clients. So, Chairperson, I think the APP in the year ahead is showing all of this. We want to harvest our huge asset portfolio by disposing non-core assets, disposing of residential units not used for specialized services, reviewing the profitability of our commercial letting out contracts, also sale of advertising space where there's huge potential, looking at commercial occupancy efficiency in terms of buildings where we lease in but we don't use it in full. We also pay a rate per square meter that is unfair and way above market rates. We want to correct those. We want to deal with phasing out private leases in favor of using state-owned buildings. That's what we're doing going forward. We also look at the fruitless expenditure, if one can call it, of having vacant land, because we must secure that land, it costs money. We also have to pay rates and taxes on that land, and it's not used, so it's spent in vain. We're looking at telecom points of presence. We have Wi-Fi infrastructure and fiber optic infrastructure running across our building. And we're also looking at optimizing the value of our strategic assets. If you look at Paulsmore Prison, on the Eufor Prison in Sandton in Johannesburg, these are very valuable pieces of land, and perhaps we could use them differently. We also have a huge parking lot across the road, and we could utilize that more optimally. So the department is thinking about generating revenue through different ways and running the PMT as a business going forward, and I know my colleagues will want to add to this at the conclusion of this presentation. Let me hand over to MBK to take us through the three parts of the APP, Chairperson, before we take questions.
Good morning again to the members of the Select Committee. I'll take you through Part A first. In terms of the constitutional, legislative and policy mandate, there are no differences from what has been presented here for the Department of Public Works. It remains the same. The strategic overview for PMTE has not changed as compared to its five-year strategic plan. Our vision, mission, values, goals and strategic objectives remain as we have had them in our five-year strategic plan. The PMTE contributes to the following outcomes. It's Outcome 6, Outcome 7, Outcome 8, Outcome 10, as well as our main outcome, which is Outcome 12. The PNC will be implementing the directives of the State of the Nation address, particularly the solar light plan, in the following areas: resource efficiency through our energy efficiency program, which is implementing the green building program for solar PV projects, biogas, waste to energy projects, as well as solar hot water; our water efficiency program; our waste management program, in which we plan to reduce the monthly waste use tariff paid to municipalities for state-owned facilities; our telemetry services, where we proactively manage immovable asset portfolio to improve the monitoring and reporting of savings. We then also contribute to the transformation of the property and construction sectors. Our main tool there is our property empowerment policy, where we want to promote transformation and skills development through the implementation of the policy, as well as to adhere to new sector codes. Our next priority area is job creation, where we will implement EPWP principles in the construction and maintenance program. We will be promoting the development of SMMEs, transformation in the built environment, and also to ensure inclusive economic growth. We will leverage all procurement spends to advance designated groups. We will ensure that the local beneficiation policy will improve socioeconomic transformation with an emphasis on the use of local content and local companies. In terms of Operation Pakisa, we will be letting out state-owned coastal properties, where we intend to create around 1,000 stable jobs as well as 2,000 work opportunities. When it comes to the external environment, we have looked at the same area for the planning as we have done for DPW. In addition, we've also looked at the property and construction sectors. In the property sectors, rental growth has been low over the last quarter of 2017, which has had an effect on the vacancies. And in the construction sector, although the construction sector has been subdued, there are a number of initiatives that are expected to improve growth in this sector in the upcoming year. When we look at the external factors that influence us as the PMCE in terms of service delivery, we look at the constrained financial position of the PMCE currently. The accommodation charges that are being recovered from client departments are inadequate to fund the upkeep of the portfolio. This has resulted in a repair and maintenance backlog and consequently a deterioration of the property portfolio. The financial impact of addressing this condition to the portfolio to an acceptable level has proved to be substantial for the PMTE. The second area is the reduction in the infrastructure budget. Due to the austerity measures, the infrastructure program budget has been reduced, which means that only prioritized future infrastructure projects will proceed. The revenue generation and cost savings initiatives. Revenue generating strategy will ensure the future financial sustainability of the PMTE. This will inevitably address the liquidity gap, including the reduction of the bank overdraft of the PMTE. In the interim, the PMTE will continue to implement its cost containment measures on procurement of goods and services, our consumption of water and energy, marketing our non-core and non-strategic vacant state-owned properties at market-related rentals, renegotiating leases, as well as ensuring debt collection. In terms of containing costs of the leased accommodation, we have an approval for deviation for renegotiation of leases, where we will ensure that we renegotiate with landlords in order to reduce costs. Managing increasing costs of maintenance and construction, in order to manage these costs, the PMCE will look at all its new construction activities and make sure that turnaround times for planning and finalizing plans and designs and drawings are re-looked at. We will also ensure savings through the implementation of the Green Building Framework, which I've discussed, the transformation of the construction and property sectors, which I've also discussed, to address the skewed patterns, implementing the incubator program as well in this area, then the infrastructure development that promotes labor-intensive construction through the EPWP principles. We further looked at the last few areas, which is the development of small harbors and coastal properties. Here we aim to attract investments by letting out of state coastal properties for development and ensure higher revenue generation. We will be doing spatial targeting in terms of the National Development Plan, where we will support economic development zones in targeted municipalities and intend to reduce the lease portfolio and save costs. We will be increasing market opportunities for black industrialists In order, using our infrastructure budget, we intend to make a significant impact in this regard by using our bargaining power and also introducing greater opportunities to maximize our commodities. In terms of availing land for socio-economic development, this was already discussed as well, we will leverage our property portfolio to ensure, using our asset-based advancement program and the outcomes thereof, to ensure that we have programs that benefit human settlement, land reform, student accommodation, as well as availing properties to entrepreneurs in the construction and property sector. In terms of operationalizing the PMTE, there are quite a few areas that we will look at, and I won't discuss each, but the main areas include the PMTE finance model, which we will develop, the itemized billing that we will start implementing this year, reducing the bank overdraft, looking at the business process review, the phase two of which has commenced this year. We will be looking at our business systems to make sure that we have an ERP system with an integrated end-to-end asset management capability. We will also look at capacitation and professionalization of the PMTE and improving audit outcomes to ensure that the asset register is valid and accurate and to ensure that we have fully adhered to GRAS principles. When it comes to the rest of the business improvement areas, we've targeted the following areas under the turnaround program. Is to improve lease management through the leasing and letting framework, our total facilities management revamp program, where we've identified 300 facilities, our supply chain management reform, where we want to differentiate between the different core streams of business within the PMTE. We will expedite infrastructure delivery, particularly looking at managing backlogs and projects in the planning and delivery phases. We will be vesting and endorsing title deeds, and approximately 7,000 is then targeted. We will be looking at componentizing the immovable asset register. This is necessary for us to also implement our itemized billing. In terms of rural precinct development, we plan to redress the spatial imbalances. The water management program, which was already discussed, covers water and sanitation services, two facilities where there are no municipal facilities available. We will implement energy efficiency measures in various state-owned properties. In terms of the internal environment, our internal environment focuses on things that we will achieve in the PMTE over the upcoming year. And the areas that we're looking at focusing on is the development of an end-to-end procurement system, the implementation of the NIMS framework, which talks about maintenance standards, accounting framework, and planning guidelines. We will look at implementing the leasing and letting framework, developing a client management protocol, as well as establishing and maintaining a register of expropriation once the bill is enacted. We will roll out GIAMA through the GIAMA Technical Committee. We will contribute further to legislation of other custodians, and we will make further amendments to our SEM prescripts once the procurement bill is finalized. When we looked at our planning for the upcoming year, we took into consideration our audit findings as well as our performance in the prior year, and we've identified the following areas for performance improvement. I won't read them all out, and they are listed as you see them there. In the APP, you will also see that we've extracted sections of our client user asset management plans, and the slide that you see in front of you talks about the demand for new space from user departments for capital. There's approximately 966,000 square meters there. You will see the demand for new space in terms of leased accommodation, and there's a summary that's provided to you, 451,000 square meters. The next slide provides a summary of improvements and a summary of land parcels per region extracted from the immovable asset register. The next slide provides a summary of the buildings and structures as well as that are unutilized as well as those that are utilized. The next slide provides a summary of the land parcels per province followed by a summary of the buildings per province. The next slide is a summary of the infrastructure pipeline. that we have across our various infrastructure stages for the upcoming financial year. And number 7 is a summary of the unscheduled maintenance trends since the 2013-14 financial year. Number 8 gives you a summary of the urban and rural precincts, developments and current developments. And 9 gives you a summary of the private leases that we currently have for user department. In terms of the organizational environment, the same factors apply for PMTE. We are implementing our new structure, taking into consideration our financial constraints. And the PMTE's APP is also influenced by our core business areas, which are listed as indicated in number 2. The process for the development of the APP for PMT follows the same as what it does for DPW. The budget allocation for PMTE is 15 billion for the 2018-19 financial year. And the allocation on the next page shows current 15 billion and capital 19 billion. Then if we go to the next slide, it shows the reduction. So we'll have a reduction on the augmentation as well as a reduction on the capital for the BCOCC portfolio. In terms of our program plans, I'll go through program 1 first. Our first strategic objective talks to finance, which is the compliant internal control and financial services. Business processes, our next phase of business processes will be complete in 2018-19. We will pay 100% of compliant invoices within 30 days. We will identify and incubate 2 revenue generation sources. We have identified 15 departments where we will implement itemized billing, and we will have an approved finance model in the next financial year. When it comes to supply chain management, 60% of all our bids will be awarded within 56 days, and 77% of our quotations will be awarded within 30 days. 75% of our procurement spend will be awarded to designated groups, and 75% of our bids will be awarded to designated groups as well. In terms of Program 1, you'll see the budget on this slide. Program 2, we have 42 user departments who will have UMs for next year. We will have 10 signed-off infrastructure worklists for our user departments that have capital programs, and we will have developed a customer relationship management strategy in the current financial year. We have 4 government precinct plans aligned to identified IDPs. We have 3 sites that will be established for planning precinct development, and we have 5 concept designs that will be completed for identified user departments. We will complete 90% of our feasibility studies within scheduled timeframe, and we will complete 90% of our evaluations within scheduled timeframe. In terms of the consideration of Program 2, KPI 9, 90% of responsive disposal requests will be processed, and our CM will be submitted to National Treasury as per the requirements of GAMA. 800 facilities performance will be assessed in identified performance areas. These are the quarterly targets for Program 2 and the budget for Program 2 of 131 million. Program 3, which is talks to our infrastructure program, our strategic objective there. The first one, to provide detailed construction plan that directs our construction projects. We will have 83 approved infrastructure project designs. We will have 128 approved infrastructure projects ready for tender. 105 infrastructure sites handed over for construction. 105 infrastructure projects completed. 84 of those will be completed within a construction period, and 84 within a agreed budget. We will create 7,511 work opportunities. 20% of our infrastructure backlog will be reduced, and we will have 297 contractors incubated through our contractor incubator program. These are the quarterly targets. The budget, 4.7 billion for Program 3. Our Program 4, Real Estate Management Services, we have 600 lease agreements that will be signed within scheduled time frame. We have 200 million savings that we will implement through our private leases. 30% of new leases will be awarded to BBB companies. 12 private leases will be reduced in the security cluster. 10% will be increased in revenue generation through the letting out of state-owned properties. 65 vacant surplus state-owned properties will be let out. 400 state-owned properties will be verified to confirm ownership, and 30 state-owned properties occupation will be online. 20 state-owned properties occupation will be rectified. We have a total of 3 special development economic frameworks that will be completed for rural coastal towns. 10% revenue increase through the rentals of state-owned small harbor and coastal properties, and 1,000 work opportunities created through the letting out of state-owned coastal and small harbor properties. These are the quarterly targets for Program 4, the budget of $10.4 billion for Program 4. Program 5, which is our real estate information and registry services, 80% of disposals approved in the previous financial year will be processed for transfer in 18-19. 100% of immovable assets will be updated on the immovable asset register for completed construction projects. We have 800 land parcels that will be vested. That means we will confirm ownership of those. 19,708 immovable assets will be verified to validate existence. 15,031 buildings will be assessed to determine the condition of components. 9 provincial asset registers will be assessed for compliance, and 4 provincial asset registers will be incorporated into a single repository. These are the quarterly targets for Program 5, a budget of $108 million. Program 6, which is our facilities management program, we have 500 facilities that will have maintenance contracts in place. 15% of our unscheduled reported maintenance incidents will be resolved within a 3 time frame. 35% term contracts will be awarded to BBB companies. In terms of the reduction on energy and water, we have 150 million kilowatts that will be reduced on identified buildings. 10 million kilowatts renewable energy will be generated, and 8 million kiloliters reduction in consumption of water on identified buildings. These are the quarterly targets for Program 5, and the budget, 3.2 billion rand for the Program 6, which is our last program on PMT. Part C of our annual performance plan talks about our infrastructure budget. Our first budget talks about new replacement, upgrades, and additions. We have a total of 329 projects that we've identified across various departmental programs. These are some of the key programs that we've key projects that we've identified under the program for new replacement, upgrades, and additions, and it's highlighted per province. The next program is for maintenance and repairs. This is comes largest out of our facilities management program. We have a total of 683 projects that we have identified for repairs and maintenance. These are some of the most significant projects that we've highlighted per province for you under the maintenance and repair program. The next long-term infrastructure plan item refers to rehabilitation, renovation, and refurbishment. We have 526 projects under this program, and it's largely within the construction project management program. These are some of the most significant projects that we've identified per province for rehabilitation, renovation, and refurbishment per province. We have an approved service delivery improvement plan in the department for a 3-year cycle. The areas of focus under the service delivery improvement program are customer-client relations, accommodation provision, accommodation improvement, and the various improvement activities are listed. We have 5 strategic risks for the PMTE. I won't read through the action plan. The strategic risks are to address inadequate service delivery leading to an erosion of the mandate. The second one is inadequate maintenance and safeguarding of state assets, inadequate delivery of national government priorities, weakening financial viability and sustainability of the PMTE, and the last one, inability to maintain a reliable and accurate immovable asset register. And that brings me to the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we'll be ready to take questions. Any of my colleagues want to add, Mr. Mokoro, Henderson, to the end?
we can take the questions for the minister and then give them. We take questions. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. The presentation, both of them were well presented and very clear. That's how long is long term?
Long term is more than 2 years, more than 2 to 3 years. Medium term will be between 2 and 3 years.
So how do you report and how do we monitor the parliament?
Yeah, in terms of our APP, we will also present in terms of our strategic plan next year at some point, in terms of our strategic plan on the 5-year horizon, what we've achieved and what we haven't achieved. So we will do that, yeah.
Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, and Officials. Time now for members to ask questions. We start with the department, we finish the department, and then we come to PMT. And I'm happy that this issue, PM of recruitment guidelines, has now been finalized. I know the question of the market is always passionate about this because there's this idea in his mind that the APWs are meant for the ANC members. So it's a recruitment guidelines. But I'm not stopping him from asking questions. Can we have him? Honorable Faba, Honorable Makwebu, Honorable Matimbula, and Honorable Makwe, in that order.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Just welcome back, Minister. I know you've got a strong hand on your department, take no nonsense attitude, and I like that. Unfortunately, you went away for a while. I hope the department didn't get a big fright when they heard that you came back. But these things happen. But now, Minister, what does disturb me is that we still got problems and things that I've been mentioning, like from 4 years ago, of properties of government, that is just actually standing there. You know, you're the custodian of government's immovable assets. And we were reading in this report, I saw there was 12 billion in land in property that is lying there that is not utilized. And now you are paying rates and taxes on these and obviously also maybe electricity on some of these properties. And it makes sense that you're going to have big losses. We've asked for the audit long time ago. And we understand that the audit is ongoing as you get new premises or as you sell. I know that it is really not the target that you can set and say we've got 100 move or we've got 100 properties and we've got 10 pieces of farms or whatever the situation is. The problem comes is where we pick up in our constituencies where there's problems, like the old police houses standing dilapidated. Those in 4 years, Minister, have not been given attention. I go to my constituency, I drive past them every time. Every time when I'm in this meeting, I've given it up. On the N12, Warrington or Mahareng, as you pass it, it's a huge, big, white elephant of the Department of Public Works. We were given now to the provincial department through to the Premier. But the problem is that huge piece of land where that old school hostel is staying there empty, dilapidated, and who's paying rates and taxes on it? Who is looking after it? They've actually got guards standing there. I don't know who's paying for that. My question is, we must understand that if these buildings and houses and pieces of land which is immovable asset, is costing government money and we're not doing anything to them. Surely we must get rid of them and then sell them and get that profit into government to reinvest it in something else. I know a lot of members also want to ask questions. The second one is just on the EPWP program. I see that there is a target of 950,000. But you almost missed that target with 400,000 opportunities to create jobs. Can you please enlighten us on that as well? I'm not going to go further because there are so much in these documents. I'll rather give to some of the other members. Thank you.
Okay, can I just review my decision? Can we ask across the department and the PSMTB, and then the section people will allocate the official to respond? Because I may get confused myself, I will know whether the person is asking the department or PMTB. So let's ask across. I don't know if you have any other questions on PMTB. Honorable Makwebu.
I'll take this time as well. Thank you, Chair. On the first one, the issue of the expanded public works program, I think many months ago I have raised this issue and we have agreed, I think Deputy Minister Cronin was here, we have agreed that there is an urgent need for guidelines to ensure that this program is delivered in a manner that is fair and transparent. The department committed that they were working on the guidelines. They were going to come back and share those guidelines with us, and then they would find them off those guidelines so that there would be a national, a guideline that informed the delivery of this program. Because it is a noble program that seeks to alleviate poverty. So there is no debate about that. Now, my understanding, Chair, is that from the presentation, the guidelines are still not complete. Because I read on slide 13 that this policy or these guidelines are still to be introduced. And if I'm wrong, I need to be corrected. And if my understanding is right, that the guidelines have not been completed by the department, notwithstanding that it's been many months ago where they committed that they will complete this process. And in all fairness, this would be undue delay on the department. And they're completely unacceptable with due respect. Now, I would need the department to tell me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the guidelines were work in progress and they are still incomplete, and it's been last year already when we were given commitment that this will be finalized. That's my first question on the EPWP program, but any person supports EPWP in this country, no doubt. Now, let's move, Chair, to the PMT presentation. Now, just two things, Minister and the team. The asset register, you have indicated that it's been a complex matter to identify the government buildings. You're doing the best you can do in the circumstances, and we understand the intricacies, and for sure it's a tedious exercise. But from the presentation, we take note that you accept from your audit findings that you need to improve because you still don't have a valid and a credible, asset register that is compliant with the GRAP, that is the audit principles. And you'll continue to be haunted by that, I'm sure you know that, until you get this right. But here is my problem. Despite this challenge, you continue to commit public funds on construction that is on the pipeline to a tune of plus minus 44 billion from your presentation. You are collecting a revenue of 4.5 billion. You've got a lease agreement that are costing the state 4.2 billion. Now, don't you think that your endeavors and your efforts should mainly focus on getting the asset register right as a starting point so that you could see whether there's still a need for construction or there's a need for only what we have and refurbish it and then save cost in the process? Because we keep now committing public funds to the tune of billions, yet we may probably have properties that are lying somewhere that belong to the state. Now, having asked that, then here is another question tied to that. Am I correct that you do not know how many assets that are belonging to the state that may be lying out there in the country, and what could be their monetary value? It's just something you cannot tell us and say, we have assets that belong to the state that may be unused or abandoned, but we don't know how many. Like Mr. Faba said, I can give you lots of examples, what used to be railway stations, houses lying there, vandalized, everybody's got a story to tell. But we know this belongs to the state, but we're asking ourselves, what's going on here? So that's my question on the PMT, but let me just follow up with the last two ones quickly. Now, on the slide number 6, Minister, you're talking about availing land, which is, again, a noble, a project. But any project must have timelines. I'm sure we agree, Minister. Can you give us a sense, when will this land be availed? Because you talk about freeing up land for land reform, human settlement, and agriculture. Beautiful, but at least we need a sense of the timeline. Would you say we have released so much hectares? Because right now it's just a projection and the hectares that you indicated that you consider releasing to releasing to for human settlement and agriculture and so forth. Slide number 10, quickly, shared, leveraging on the immovable asset portfolio. Now let's talk about that. Amongst many other things that you want to do is to release that land or use that land for sale of advertising space. Again, this is another noble endeavor, but one wants to ask a question. How do you plan to do that? Because any endeavor from the state, where the state must leverage the BEE, so that the beneficiaries on this sale of advertising space should be the previously disadvantaged. And therefore, you need to have a policy that will say, when we leverage this, we will use it in a manner that those who want to come into or want to advertise or the entrepreneurs, you must be biased to those who may not have capital, and that is the BEE agenda. Otherwise, that space will be utilized by those who have money and those who can buy all the space that you may free up for advertising. So you need to have a principle there that is biased to those that were previously disadvantaged. Last one, Chair, I promise you. The issue on slide number 18, then I'm going to pause. External factors influencing service delivery on the point number 4, containing cost to off-lease accommodation. Now, you said to contain cost, you have obtained deviation from Treasury to renegotiate leases to save cost. Again, at face value, it makes sense, but I am worried that where there's deviation, it becomes open and vulnerable to corruption, because officials are going to go and renegotiate these deals. But as I'm saying to you, those officials are vulnerable and open to corruption, unlike in an open tender and bid, because there is clear Treasury, instructions and regulations and, policies and legal framework, how bidding processes should be followed. Now, here is my question, Minister. Those that will be renegotiating these leases in your team, have you considered that they will be vulnerable to this fraud and corruption? If so, what are the safety nets have you put in place? For instance, I would say to you, if I were in your shoes, I would make sure that those that negotiate are vetted properly and they are subjected to lifestyle audits continuously, just to ensure that they are not only negotiating on behalf of the department and pocketing the money for themselves. That we know it happens without accusing anyone, but we would want you to comment on that. But my suggestion is that they should be subjected to periodical lifestyle audits and vetting, just to make sure that they do not unduly enrich themselves. And lastly, slide 22, capacitation and professionalization of the PMTE. Again, here I see you have a noble project of finally having a public works academy, and because you need technical skills, Minister, as we have said, and surely we all agree with that. But again, this is a project, isn't it? Now, any project will have timelines. Can you give us an idea so that we have an idea to say this is a 5-year project, or how long will it take, so that we could be able to hold each other accountable? Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that, Chair, your patience and indulgence. Let me just check if I have the last one here. No, I don't, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Matebula.
Like Chairperson, she would say such a mean minister, I should soon go la. If you love to go to department, ya public works. Kuna ma security guard na marinda ko kwala ya ko mi dimi nga la ko tandlela ya ko menga kota ko
unfortunately the application facilities are not always there in committee, so we'll request if you can ask your question in English. I know your language is one of the 11 officials. Progress on the separation between the PMT from public works.
when it was first mooted, we thought that it would take you much longer. But we're amazed at what comes out of this APP. My first question, Chair, would be related to AGRIMA. I've seen a display here last week of tar. I don't know what you call these things technically, that they've been using there when you come from Cape Town Airport, just when you make the turn. And I know that when we last engaged with AGRIMA, we were told that you're doing that. Have you already worked out how AGRIMA is going to cooperate with SABS? Because from the DTI perspective, we know, Minister, that we have had serious concerns about the SABS, but we don't want to compromise, particularly the quality of our construction work and quality of our roads. That's the first one, what's happening in that space. The second one is, Chair, on the IGR that Minister referred to. There is a slide where you are talking about the number of IGR initiatives that you would be working. But, and you mentioned 15. Do I need to find the slide or is it fine? You mentioned 15 on the slide. And I'm saying, but it can't be 15. There has to be more than that. 15 IGR initiatives. Because the reason why we're raising this, Chair, is because we have picked up from many of the comments and questions that came, there are these three spheres of government. And I myself, I'm confused in my constituency as to who owns it. Let me give you one example. We went, Minister, to a beautiful project in Devlin, where JOSCO is the contractor. I think Stanley was with us when we went there. That housing project where they're working with the EPWP people as well, he wasn't with us. But that project, this is new houses, not the old building. It's a new structure, and it's standing still. Now, I'm not going to go into the politics of what's happening in the city of Joburg, but to say that I fear that that investment, new as it is, would be vandalized as well. But the problem that I'm having as a member of parliament is I don't know who to talk to have that address. So maybe you can help us on that element of IGR. Chair, and then on slide 47, that's the one where you have the number. Slide 47, then I jump to slide 57. Very easy question for me on that one. The presentation only talks about 2% of people with disabilities. Do you have plans to increase that? Because I think for the last 4 years, you have stuck on the 2%. Are there plans to increase that? That's on that one presentation, Chair. Then on my presentation related to the PMTE, I want to refer you to slide 65. No, it's not there. I have my numbers wrong. Yeah, you are talking on slide 65 about the verification of state-owned properties. Now, I have said this before, that you did make available to us a copy of the asset register. But help us just in terms of process. Like the properties that Honorable Father has spoken to, the properties that I've spoken to. Is there someone, Minister, within your department that you could refer us to, that we don't have to do questions for written reply? That some of these things that we pick up during our oversight and our travels, is there someone in your office that we can liaise with just to be guided on the verification processes, because all of us are sharing the concern about how exactly we maximize the state-owned assets to benefit our people. Chair, let me leave it at that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Teller.
Chair.
Honorable Art, for your cover. For you. Okay, after you. All right.
Chair, thank you so much. Just a small one. I heard in the presentation that the department was also rolling out incubation. Is that incubation separate from the incubation run by the DTI? If so, why the fragmentation? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bowden.
Thank you, Chairperson. I greet all of you with Assalamu alaikum. The vision without action remains a dream, and of course action without vision is a nightmare. But here we've seen a great vision in front of us, and I do humbly believe that the mission can also be achieved. But, and it's not so much of a question, but yes, perhaps you could, to what extent we hear so much about the fourth industrial revolution, and I do humbly believe that with so much on the table, it is going to be very, very important, in fact, imperative that this department develops IT systems that will assist in the unfolding of your programs. So if the department could give me some idea. The other issue is, it's also getting more of a comment, you know, lots of these projects that are on the table are very much transformationary in nature. So, you know, I was told many years ago that transformation, if it's not done, Honorable Chair, within 2 years, then by the third year, what was established in the first year actually becomes irrelevant or invalid. So lots of these projects must be achieved within a framework of 2 years in order to make them meaningful. The third issue I want to raise is the one of the provincial departments and the relationship between the national department and the provincial departments, which provincial departments are problematic in unfolding the programs that we have on the table here. Of course, we all know Northwest will be on the list, but which are the other provinces? I'm not sure about Western Cape. All right, never mind. Let me not go there. Okay, and then, but let us know which departments, especially I would be concerned about my own province, whether they are problems. Because, which are the provinces giving problems to the national department in unfolding out the programs, Deputy Minister? You mentioned Carolina. Now, the only reason I'm asking this question is what is going to be done in Carolina. It's just a few kilometers from where I live. So I'll just be keeping an eye on that project to see how it's unfolding so that I can say, well, okay, this Department of Public Works is delivering on their agenda. That's my... Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Are there any members who would like to ask questions? As I indicated, you're not going to have Senator Honorable Dehan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Many questions have been tackled by the Honorable Member, but I want to check with the Department on 8.71. I see from 2014-15, they gave themselves a target. Even 2020-21, they do also have a target. My question is, why do they aim low? Because if they aim low, they will always perform low. But if they aim high, I believe they'll end up getting 100%. Only that one, Chair.
Those are the questions.
One more, Chair.
Indicating what we must be done with the responses by 12:30, and we must also still deal with the minutes, that which must be done with the meeting by 12:45. So I'll give the time now, all the time to the department until 12:30.
Yeah, Chair. There are a number of themes, and what I'll start with is the theme on EPWP, and I'll allocate Mr. Stanley Henderson to deal with those questions around EPWP. I think I'm hearing the issue of targets versus past performance, and I'm hearing the issue of the provision of guidelines in terms of EPWP. Those are the sort of key questions. I'll ask Mr. Henderson to deal with it, and then we'll go to the next one. Will be, I think, the issue on asset register, but let's deal with EPWP.
That's on the guidelines. Are they on your website?
Okay.
Because I want us to finalize this one for all.
May I on the chair? Sorry. Guidelines. The guidelines had been developed, and the guidelines have been, or the document had been approved by the Minister of Labour in December 2017. And we are in the process of obviously rolling it out. And the importance of this for the EPWP is to cut down on our reputational risk. Because as the approach of the Expanded Public Works Program is that poor is poor is poor, and therefore there shouldn't be any preferential treatment, but should be local communities themselves should be consulted when projects are started, and the guidelines clearly outline what needs to be done. So we have to be very clear on this. So yes, it has been approved, and we will distribute it. It has not been posted on the website as yet, but we will certainly do that. Yeah. The underperformance against the targets, Honourable Chair and members, you would notice that in the first, in 2014-15, the target had been achieved. 2016-17, there was slight underachievement, and then the gap actually became bigger in terms of the targets that had to be achieved. And there are various reasons for that. One of that is the strict requirements that have been set by the AG with regard to the portfolios of evidence that the Department of Public Works must keep. So we receive a lot of data, but not all data pass the muster, so to speak, and therefore cannot be included in the final report. Hence, what we are doing is we are working closely with implementing bodies to assist them to capture data, get it onto the system. But there has been definite underperformance in years, especially years 2, 3, 4, and we are currently in the final year of the 5 years. I'm sure Deputy Minister talk about what they're doing with regard to alerting Cabinet also with regard to this issue. There was one other question that's with regard to people with disabilities. The target had been set of 2%. This is an extremely important one for us, the targets, or what we call the designated groups, women, youth, and then people with disabilities. And the targets have been set for women, youth at 35%, for both, and then 2% people with disabilities. We are working very hard to ensure that as you would understand, or in the infrastructure sector, for instance, certain types of jobs simply cannot be done, with people with disabilities for obviously occupational health and safety reasons. But
we have made a consistent effort and we consistently work towards the areas that can be targeted to employ people, be it in administrative positions on projects and many others. At this stage, we are working on proposals for the expanded public for what lies beyond the current five-year phase, the phase three, working on phase four. And we are busy revisiting all targets and or reviewing everything in terms of what has worked. So for phase four, we will definitely have to have a look at the target for people with disabilities and what kinds of programs should be introduced to ensure that we can push this higher. Currently, most sectors, except for the social sector, have underperformed on the target for people with disabilities of 2%. Thank you.
That was deployed by the first of all, thanks to the colleagues for raising these issues around the EPWP. And thanks, Chairperson, for asking the question, which I failed to ask, is have we posted the guidelines on our website? And I think through you, I think we must instruct the colleagues, and I think they've undertaken to do that, to immediately, as of today, put it up so that it's available to all of us when we're in our constituencies and so on, so that we can check against them and advise the practice. Let me just repeat what I said in the National Assembly budget debate. It is fraudulent and corrupt to recruit people on the basis of friendship, in these programs on the basis of party affiliation, on factional affiliation and so on. It's absolutely, it's seriously problematic. These programs, and thank you also, I think, generally one's hearing support for the programs from all of those who have spoken on the matter. One of the key objectives in us, we all know that unemployment, many surveys around the world tell us that communities which are very poor, but where there's employment, are communities that are more coherent and more cohesive than communities that maybe are poor, but maybe even less poor, but where there's no reason to get up in the day, no sense of contributing through work and so on to your communities and so on. And therefore, perhaps the most important contribution that these programs make is to build and rebuild community cohesion in communities that are riddled with crime and any challenges and so forth. And therefore, factional employment, a recruitment into these programs, undermines that very point. It creates divisions and suspicions and so forth. So with your assistance in our different constituencies, so we've really got to stamp it out. I suspect, Chairperson, that one of the problematic areas is that in many municipalities, what happens is that part of the incentive grant that goes to municipalities to incentivize these programs is doled out individually to ward councillors. And that's a recipe for disaster. Because even if it's an honest ward councillor, people so desperately want to, there are more people that want to get onto the program than are available positions. So even if the person is honest, the allegation is going to be, why am I not in the program? Why are these people? And you're going to say it's because they're DA, if it's a ward councillor, you're going to say, or whatever. So thank you very much for raising those issues. I won't go into the details around the challenges around the work opportunity target, but maybe we can use our debate in the House tomorrow to also add some thoughts on it. But it is a challenge. We are working on it. And I think that DDG Henderson has pointed in the direction that we are working to. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I would request that, especially for the poor people, we as parliamentarians, we become responsible when we deal with this matter. Especially these accusations and counter-accusations. Otherwise, we're going to make ordinary people fight when we're supposed to be giving guidance. And I think that now there's this issue of the guidelines, we must insist that there must be adherence to the guidelines. It can't be an accusation against the ANC versus the other party. Because if you look into big municipalities today, who's controlling that? It's
not the ANC. So, and these things are implemented at the municipality level. So it's across the political divide where there are these divisions. Let me leave it there.
Could I just make one request that should members become available of any irregular practices, that we as Department of Public Works should be alerted as collecting departments. We do follow up on these, and it's important that so that there would be no suspicion hanging over the program. And thank you.
Actually, I think that the next theme is around the asset register. I think it's around empty state facilities and the cost of that. It's around, where is the asset register in terms of status? But also, I think the issue of the asset register also talks to the fears of government, because I've heard, for instance, railway lines and so forth, that we may need to clarify the various custodial functions or various spheres of government and also state-owned enterprises, so that, you know, when we speak about these things, we know who is responsible. And I think it may be a theme that we may come to, because it's emerging in all the public platforms that we're interacting around these spheres of government. But I'm going to ask Mr. Cox Mokoro to deal with some of the sub-items, cost, status, and an enhancement of the other.
Thanks, Mr. Marocha. Thanks, Chair and honourable members. Just put a little bit of status with respect to the assets register. And I think honourable member Makue has actually made the point that we have submitted the completed asset register form of a disk call to the committee staff. So, in essence, and I'm trying to marry that with the outcome of the Auditor General so that we can put things in the right perspective. The asset register is complete, and there's actually no doubt about the completeness of the asset register. And when we talk about the completeness of the asset register, it means the actual items that are supposed to be within the listing of the register of state as an asset. So those things exist. They've been identified, that's why they're in the register. And those that were actually may not have been identified at the time from the ground, they've been also identified. So the AG, when the AG concludes on the completeness of the asset register, the AG considers all things in terms of information that's sitting there with the different authorities, as in your Surveyor General and all that, so the disregister. Now, all of that process is starting to sort of reconciling what's the state portfolio in terms of the current custodial framework that we have in the new dispensation of the new South Africa. If you look at the asset register and go back to the history, before 1994, you had different custodians of assets. You had the country with four provinces, with four independent states, the TBDCs, and nine self-governing territories and other agencies, all of which were owners of the immovable assets or custodians of the immovable assets. Post-1994, the whole construct of the country was changed, where all these assets all over the area had to be pulled together and split up in terms of the new custodial framework that we have, which is six national departments and the nine provinces that we have. So that's how it is. So we had to do all this work since 1996. Wow, it has been happening, and it was intensified in 2013, and we completed this task last year, doing all this reconciliation. So that exists, and we've proven that the assets exist, and we've proven that we own these assets. So there's no doubt around that issue. The issue with respect to the audit was around the application of the value to these assets. And the value, not as in the value that you transact with, a value in the form of what would have been the cost when you actually acquired that asset at that time. So you have to apply a mathematical calculation and all of that to arrive at what we call a deemed cost. And today, that deemed cost sitting in the asset register
you know, just the speak of about 136 billion rand. That's sitting there. And the AG identified an error that occurred within the determination of that value and in the previous audit. And we agreed with the AG, and the process was, in the year 1718, rectify the thing around just the value. Rectify the thing, fix it up, so that in the year that you start the audit, the time when you start the audit of 1718, which started on the 1st of June by the AG can confirm that there are rectified. So the issue is around just the application of the mathematical calculations of the expense to get to the value. So in terms of existence, in terms of ownership, do we know what we own? Yes. Do you know what you own does exist? Yes. So that you can say was a clear level of certainty. And just to give you an indication of what you're talking about, we're talking about an extent of 29,000 land parcels, which in terms of extent, in terms of the size and hectareage, we're talking about 5.4 million hectares of land. And on this land parcel, those that have got improvements, we've got somewhere in the order of about 92,000 improvements which are buildings on the land parcel. And if you break this up, and there was a slide that actually broke up the assets in terms of what it is, and it gave what specialized, specialized offices and residential. And what we also can tell you is that of all these properties that you have in terms of the buildings that you have, the 92,000 structures, 93% of them are occupied. 7% are empty. Do you know, and that comes to the question that I was asked, do you know these specifically? Yes, you went into the register. In terms of the physical verification that you did in terms of occupancy and all that, we've identified those assets. So we've got a list, and this is something that started off last year. So we have a list of all those assets that are vacant. We know them, and the process that we are doing now is to sit back and ask ourselves the question. These buildings that are empty, what is the intention of state with that? We look at our users, our client department, we look at their user asset management plans, and we look at what the intentions are before we can start the process of disposal. So that process of sorting all those things out is underway. And who deals with this thing? There's a gentleman by the name of Mr. Dyer Governor, who's responsible for our real estate management services, who, when you've identified an empty building and want to know what happens to you, you can get in touch with him, and I'm sure we can give the details of the governor. And in terms of just the identification of the empty buildings and properties that we have, I mean, between land and the buildings themselves, we've identified them, like I said, specifically. We've even determined what is the actual cost of these things that's sitting in the asset register. And the cost is about 7.4 billion rand. That's a deemed cost. Or you can say it's a deemed value, but a deemed cost. 7.4 billion rand. And does it mean if we take these assets and just sell them, are we going to collect 7.4 billion rand? That's a question that Julie's asked on that one, because then we have to go out and determine the appetite of the market to be able to absorb and buy them. And how are we going to dispose of them? There is a framework that you operate under, which is governed by National Treasury, which talks to how you procure and how you dispose. And all of it is within the constitutional principles that are set, transparency, equity, openness, competition, all of those things. So you can't go and just do it for your friends on the side, so you're going to do it appropriately, and I think that's what you're going to be doing in terms of disposing of these kind of things. And there's a number of things that you've identified. Now that you've got the asset register, which is a massive portfolio, it is by far the largest in the Southern Hemisphere, in fact, in actual fact. You can't find a portfolio of this size anywhere else except for in this country. Do we have lessons of what to do with this thing? No, we don't have a blueprint. This is brand new stuff, blue sky thinking of how we manage it. And so those are the kind of things that we're doing. And we need to leverage value out of this thing, and we've identified a number of things. In actual fact, yesterday we did a whole detailed presentation of what are those things that we want to be doing to leverage value of this asset to ensure that we raise enough money for a less reliance on the state in the context of the budget cuts that you've seen in the presentation. And we've identified a number of things. The sale of advertising space, a whole lot of things.
And just on the scene of the time, in particular, identified some of the over 150 buildings, even just as a start to run a pilot. 150 buildings in the big cities. We've got the list. We've got the size of the buildings to be able to say, yes, we're going out to the market, people want to advertise, we want to advertise what's the space, and we can start the calculation of those things, and we'll determine the amount. The unused properties that are vacant sitting there, have we determined the level of saving we can have? Yes, we have. We know the amount, what we're paying for electricity, what we're paying for security, what we're paying for rent and taxes. We've quantified those to an extent of about 267 million rand. So that's exactly what we're going to be doing. Focus on this. So the beauty of this thing is that if, as we say, we started off with no asset register. Now we have it. And we can start to think about all of these innovative ways of how to deal with it, to harvest this thing and make sure that we did properly. So now we have the information. I think there was a question on, and maybe I'm tied up to the fourth industrial revolution. I think if you look at our portfolio and you think of what are the possibilities to be a active participant of the fourth industrial revolution, we've actually developed a digital strategy on the back of our portfolio, given our footprint nationally. And one of the things that we are pursuing is how can we, utilizing our point of presence nationally, of our buildings, how can we utilize them to create points of presence for telecommunications and internet broadband connectivity. And in terms of connecting your fibers, your buildings around that, so that you have one seamless broadband telecommunications infrastructure that can create the largest telecom company for state. And we are talking with sister companies, SOEs, in the space to start to leverage the data approach. So the whole buzz thing that you say, the Internet of Things, and how we can utilize the Internet of Things to turn our buildings into smart buildings, that's what we are doing. In actual fact, that's the next phase we're going to get into as a detailed and focused manner. And we'll be running with that to make sure that we utilize it. We want, as we said, the asset register is the current architectural construct of the asset register is the facility, the land parcel. You have a facility on the land parcel. You've got a number of buildings in that facility. And that's as far as it goes in terms of the GRAP compliance, which you comply with. But on the next level is in this building, what are the key critical components that you have so that you can then know the lifts, your boilers, your all those HVAC equipment, so that you can then be able to maintain your portfolio. The maintenance of the portfolio is not just about painting the walls and that. That's nothing. It's about those critical components to make sure they work all the time. And you need information in your register at that level to overlay on top of it your entire maintenance strategy. You need high-powered IT systems to run that. We actually ran a pilot on a telemetry system by one of the service providers, and it gave us phenomenal information. And out of that information, we managed to do, at a detailed technical level, the condition assessment of 13 pilot buildings that we identified, and what would be the cost of fixing up those things. And if you then take what that cost is for the 13 buildings that we identified, which came from 650 million rand, almost 0.65 billion rand, to spend the money to get it right and then do a maintenance program. And if you supplement that figure to the entire population, the number was quite astronomical. So that's what we've started doing, just from 30. So that's the use of IT to get us to this point. And to manage a portfolio of 92,000 structures, you can't do it manually. Hence the speak talking in the presentation about the integrated enterprise resource planning system that integrates all your operating systems, your financial system, central to which is the asset register. That we are doing as well and we're rolling it out. Thanks.
Chair, I think those were sort of the two big things. So maybe I'll go through each question and attempt to answer it, and also point to some of the colleagues that could help.
I think the question was posed around the renegotiations of leases and making sure that the individuals who participate are properly vetted. I think the general point to make is that PMT and Public Works is a very intensive procurement department. I mean, we procure around 20 billion per annum on average. Therefore, as a matter of course, the issues about vetting for all senior personnel that are involved in transaction is a standard process. But over and above that, I think Minister has alluded to the issue about an enhanced effort to stamp out fraud and corruption, and there are many problems that we have around that area. And I think the Minister can even include, can maybe comment about his decision to actually institute lifestyle audits for senior managers in the department. But it's a general issue because we are a transaction-rich department. The specific issue about the security personnel, we had a small number of temporary security personnel, and they have been absorbed in the department. But let me also clarify that by and large, for client departments, they provide their own security and cleaning and gardening. So we do not have a big contingent of individuals in that category. And the issue of the databases of buildings in municipalities, I think it's dealt with in terms of the asset register and the various sphere of government. There was a question on AGRIMA, two questions, and I think maybe it's one question around the collaboration of AGRIMA with SABS. And look, we can actually make a written answer there in collaboration with our colleagues in AGRIMA so that we make sure that we cover the correct basis. But as the standard process, there is a collaboration between the two entities. There was the issue about the role of IGR and the projects that the initiatives that they've targeted. And I think related to that is the education around the various spheres of government, making sure that MPs understand who is responsible for what. And I made the point that I think it's a point that we'll return to, because it's a big issue that when people see empty buildings, they assume, you know, they are part of the, you know, national public work. But I think it's an ongoing education about the various custodians in various spheres of government. There was a question of incubation, and I think the question that relates specifically to the incubation happening in the DTI. You know, why are we having our own incubation? I think the issue is really just a matter of focus. We are more focused in property. So we want to create a pool of expertise among particularly people who have not had an opportunity to come into the property space. So our incubation is specific to our mandate of property and also construction. The issue of the fourth industrial revolution, I think, has been answered by Mr. Mohoro. The issue of which provinces are their problems do we know? I think through MINMEC, I think there's one forum in MINMEC which is called the Public Works Infrastructure Forum, where each forum, including our national department, reports on infrastructure. But we can only see the public works sector. We cannot see the whole portfolio of the provinces. But in there, there's monitoring of infrastructure delivery in provinces, and there's reporting through MINMEC to indicate which provinces are not performing. There was a question around Carolina. I didn't get it in terms of, you know, projects around Carolina. And there was a question about low targets, but I didn't get which low targets were specifically referred to. So, if you have, so you may deal with it if you have not dealt with it. Okay. Maybe you'll deal with it if you, okay, you have dealt with it. Chair, I'll stop there, and if there's any clarification, we can take clarification. Thanks.
On the Colorana, can you elaborate?
Thank you, Chairperson. Isn't it, there was a mention, it's now in the first presentation, 365 million rand over the next 4 years, and one of the towns I heard in Carolina being mentioned. So I'm assuming there's a project that's going to take place in Carolina. I'm asking, what exactly is that project? Is it, you know, refurbishing a building, or what is it? Look, it's not a big deal. You can always give it to me later. It's no big deal.
That's another one from Honourable Magwe. Can you not a new question?
No, it's just a follow-up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. I thought, Chair, through your permission, I would ask perhaps, I'm sorry, I forgot his name, the gentleman who spoke a lot around the issue of asset register and the information that is readily available. Tate Mokgoro, thank you. Okay. Tate Mokgoro, through you, Chair, can you share this information with us perhaps in writing to the committee? I'll tell you why, because he has said a lot that and he's given us figures of the property. We know we've got the property that is unused, vacant, how much we're spending on it, 257 million, and that. If you can give us that information that he shared with us in writing so that we don't misquote each other and we can pursue these matters in the interest of all of us. Can you agree on that, Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Minister?
While Minister is still conferring, let me talk to the issue of Carolina. I can see it's under rural development. It's under the development of rural precincts. I mean, the general principle of government precincts is to develop facilities where collectively government can service communities, and we call them precincts. And here, one of the precincts is been covered in Corolla. That's the thing.
Just to link with what Ntate Maruma is saying, if you go to the small dormitories, you will find that Home Affairs or any other department is operating into some dilapidated house and it's paying about 200,000 a month. Now what we are saying is we need to improve those small dormitories and have some small government precincts where you can put about three or four departments together, and especially on the services which our people want, Home Affairs, SASA, and so on and so on. That's the concept. So the 350 covers the different areas, not just one particular area. But I also thought that the issue raised by Honorable Fomba right at the beginning, I think we keep on getting this information in many of the platforms. The issue of the deserted police stations and even military what to call bases, it's a real problem. I can tell you that in East Rand, in Niger, there's one base which was deserted there. And two foreigners have taken over. Rwandans have taken over. It's a matter we're discussing with. Because sometimes some of these things are delegated to those departments. And when they leave them, they do not want them anymore. They are not reporting to us. But also you must note, as you, Cox, was saying, some of those properties belong to various parastatals. A lot of land, it's under the parastatals, along the railway lines, and so on, including ESCOM. And people, when they see them, they tend to think that they are under us. But we've raised with them because they need to look after them. They need to look after them. But we take it that, for instance, if there are these police stations, these deserted areas, don't be afraid just to write to us directly and say we've picked up this thing so that we can quickly follow it up and say, what is happening? And what Cox was saying, we might have identified it as our asset, as to how, in which state is it kept by those who are using. That's another issue. Thank you.
There was a question on the low target. Has that been responded?
Yes, Honourable Chair. Let's talk about EPOPs. And the performance against the target, and what we are doing to try to rectify the situation.
Okay, can I just ask a question to the CFO? If you go to page 38 and 39, the total revenue for this financial year is 19.9 billion. And on 38, I think the expenses are 15.4 billion. But if you also go to other years as well, you find that throughout you have a surplus. For example, on this financial year it's 4.4 billion. Next financial year, 2019-20, 5.2, and 2020-21, 5.5. Don't you think PMTE doesn't need the transfer from the department if only point can be sustainable?
No, Chair. In actual fact, the opposite is actually applicable. I think there's an issue of an accounting and an actual cash issue, and I think that's where it is. When you think about an accounting, you take things in which are non-cash items, you take them out, you do whatever, yeah, the depreciations and all that, so that's what it actually appears to be, as opposed to cash. The opposite is identified too, and I think we've got a whole storyline around the financial difficulties that PMT has, and where those come from and where we are in terms of those things. So the opposite is identified too. The fiscal is cutting down the allocation, and currently we are dependent almost 90% on the accommodation charges that we are levying to our clients or user department. And just by way of an example, maybe just to give you a sense of this, you recall that in 2006 there was a devolution of budgets. All accommodation budgets of departments were sitting with public works. So public works had a huge budget. And the decision was taken that, no, for us as a state to know what is the true cost of running a department, we should make sure that all the costs of running a department are within the baseline of those departments. So the accommodation costs were devolved to those departments. And that's in 2006. And it was said, because the responsibility of managing this portfolio is the custodian's responsibility, so public works will levy a rental to these departments, they will pay to public works, and that's where the 4.5 billion rent comes in. But at that time, an example that I can give is of Berlin, office Berlin. At that time, when we calculated what the actual rate should be per square meter to charge to the user department for the use of the Berlin, the amount that was calculated was 26 cents per square meter. When we plug this number into the entire portfolio of what departments are using, it's a very big number, and government could not afford it. And the decision was taken, no, let's look at the rate that fits in with the allocations that are sitting in this department. And that rate was dropped from 26 cents to 4.24. Now you can imagine the gap that exists. And it was agreed that the 4.24 will increase over 10 years at a rate of about 15% to catch up with the 26 rand. However, what was not considered was the fact that the 26 rand would also grow. And today we are sitting at 76 rand or 75 rand for a true rate to run the city versus today's rate is about 15 square meter. It was a huge gap, and that is a funding gap that we're talking about for PMT.
Thank you very much. members, the questions have been responded to. Is that fine?
Yes,
thank you.
The rest of
the committee will follow. Yes. I'll now over again to Minister for closing remarks.
What is the closing remark? Except to say, what is very clear, to professionalize this department after so many years, it's
very complex. It's going to need not just the vision, but it's going to need skills. And you're talking about skills which are lying in the private sector. And we're there to go out and look for those skills. Sometimes the private sector, I mean the public sector remuneration packages are not compatible with what is there in the private sector to bring those people. And I can tell you, in this area where we are, in the main, you need built environment people. You need property people who are very expensive if you want to professionalize this. That's why I was saying it's not going to be easy, but we are trying. We are trying by all means. We need those actuaries, young actuaries there. We need those engineers, those architects, and so on and so on. But Kanani, we will be there. Biggie, we will arrive. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Minister. Before we close, what's on this area? We will now decide whether to adopt the ATP. There's a resolution that I'll be reading for members to move and second the adoption of the ATP and budget. The Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered Budget Vote 11, Public Works, and the Annual Performance Plan 2018-2019 of the Department of Public Works, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. The report to be considered. And we have a move on. Honorable Tejal. Second.
I thought maybe you want me to record it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I, Matsufo Kotlara Dihali, move that we adopt the TAP of this department. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any second?
Me sitting next to the Honorable Dihali, support.
Thank you very much. It has been adopted, and I'm signing this here. It will be 83 as well. So I'm also on record. Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, and officials, for coming. We really appreciate you're one of the few departments that are bringing the political leadership to these meetings. We really appreciate that. We will release you now, Mr. and your team, and then we continue with the internal issues and the committee. Thank you very much.
And then when he makes you angry, I'm not going to tell you about
I take it for him. Everywhere that I ask for him.
Your quality.
Honourable members, can we just continue with the meeting? Honourable Baba. Are only released department. Congratulations, man.
Honorable Vaga, can I just continue?
No, money?
I almost walk out.
And the report?
No.
I'm going to play a game.
That was the plan, but I forgot my time of playing office. I wasn't planning to go to
bed.
Oh. You know, to make a breakfast break, let your rent, make an egg.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to go there for myself. But there's one thing I didn't understand. It's not possible. Then I can send the message that he was looking for me.
Okay.
I didn't respond to that. Because he sent me to buy me something. Why is he pretending that he's going to
where I
was?
You know.
Okay.
I didn't respond to that.
I don't like you must talk to me so closely.
Honorable members, can we deal with the, we have 3 cents of minutes? No, I was releasing the department. We said we're going to continue with our internal matter. Tender is going to pump a punch. I'm joking. We are adopting the minutes. The first set is the minutes of the 24th of April. We will go page by page if there are any corrections.
Okay,
guys, let's go. Page one,
Chairperson, can I make the general comment?
Okay.
We've done this before.
Yes.
We have requested that when the minutes come to us, somebody should have edited. Can I ask that it be recorded in the minutes? That minutes must be edited. We can't sit here and edit minutes. Let me tell you what's happening in this minute. If you look at page 2, there on top, the Honorable Lond was both present and delivered an apology. The 24th of April. Now, Chair, the second thing just on that minute, if you allow me, under 2.3, it says from the bottom in the third bullet, members were concerned about the progress with regard to the national oil industry. That is not a member's concern. It was Honorable Father. The minute should read a member, not members. Thank you, Chair. That's on that minute, Chair. However, that's not a serious matter. I am happy, because you've allowed me to raise this, to propose for the acceptance of that, Mr. Chair, with a correction on whether the Honorable Lord was present or absent. I can't remember.
What question? I remember. Okay. I think we were at room 456.
Yes, I called.
Can we have a second? I said in the chair, and then the next set of minutes are dated the 25th of April. That was a touch or tap. Yeah. We were not there.
No, we were there.
So.
Everything went well with the
cuts.
I see the minutes are nice and clean.
No, Chair. She can speak for herself.
for
instance. The Honorable Martin Rula. You were not there.
Oh, she's not here. She was there.
No, she was not there. My point there is, Chair. You, the Minister Martin Honorable Mklanga is present. Excellent. Let's have the consistency. If he was absent, the Honorable Martin Rula was also absent.
Honorable Matevula is not a member of the committee. She has not been 86 to be a member of the committee.
Thank you. Well, she must be excused.
No? Only register her when she is present.
Chairperson, this is a concern. I mean, all members can come to meetings. I do understand that. I had like a Lucilla Tomani Kiss yesterday with an ex-chief whip when I was saying we're your ATC.
Yes.
But this is really a problem. I mean, you know, when you get to it, for myself, I thought that the honourable member was part of the committee. Now I hear it's not been ATC. What is the situation? Is it that the administration is not doing it? What is the problem?
I did raise the issue of Honorable Matevula with the whip of the CFF, Honorable Mukwe. She said to me she's been raising it with the chief whip, but she's going to continue raising it. I don't know, perhaps, because I was also concerned the fact that we attend the meeting, but she has not been ATC, I raised it. I'll raise again with the Honorable Mukwele as well as the chief, so it can be recorded so that I can perhaps report back in the next meeting.
Because the implication is now it shows that she's not even coming to the meeting, or she's putting in a...
No, she's recorded when she's in the meeting.
But
when she's absent, she's not recorded.
No, but Chair, I thought the point that Honorable Fargo is going to raise, if she's not 80 seats as a member,
exactly.
Her presence doesn't count.
Exactly.
It affects our quorum. Because she's not registered as an alternate member either.
We're dealing with the ministry.
I think we've approached this matter. It can be handled at your level and what have you.
Yeah.
Now, Chair, the minutes of the 25th of April 2018, I move that they be adopted.
Okay. Honorable Dikhan. Okay. The last set is the minutes of the 2nd of May. Okay. Honorable text?
No, Chair. In terms of substance, I think I'm okay.
Yes.
But just on the attendance of members, I've been donated to the blue train.
No.
If that can be corrected. and the Honorable Matthew will also.
That's a sign,
and Honorable Lord is here. So if that can be corrected, I think I can move.
Well, after two problems, I don't know.
With the corrections, Chair, I second motion.
No, Chair.
We're subject to corrections.
No,
we are done now.
It's not properly corrected. The Honorable Matevula was in the meeting two times. Is that why she's not here now? She was there.
Yeah, I think that one that we are having there.
She was representing both the EFF as well as the ANC.
Mm.
I know she's a former ANC member.
Okay. Correction has been noted.
Chairperson?
Question, Baba.
Then the question again is, should this member be noted here as present?
I think if a member that whoever is present as a member should be recorded, because a member is present. Even if there's another member who just come here, knowing that this is not his or her committee, but he comes, he's present, then he will be recorded as a person who has attended. Okay, Honorable Tejas.
About this mistake. This one is a very serious mistake. I know mistakes normally happen, but this one of taking interview to DA, are you going to check before this is 86 that the correction has been done? Because we might say we are adopting.
I'm not going to buy it, like
No. I want to tell you this. Are you seriously going to check before this is 86? And clearly, if you can make mistakes like yours, you can't do this one. Thank you so much to the DA. But I think Faba to the ANC.
Please take it.
All right. Under point five.
Yes.
It's supposed to be minuted that this committee has accepted the APP and budget.
Yes.
This minute just says development, the plan of the Department of Small Development was seconded.
The correction will be made. We note all the other mistakes, but the point that was raised by.
But not the budget. That doesn't mean we vote for the budget.
No, we accept the presentation of both the APP and the. But that one will be dealt with on the 28th when we deal with the appropriation figure.
I know.
The next point, so we're moving next to the minutes with the correction.
What correction?
Can we have a move?
No, I move. What correction?
Yes. Correction. My point. Okay. Thank you very much. Can I just make an announcement?
Record.
We have the two reports, honorable members, but we don't have time now. We have a report of West Coast, the oversight visit that we conducted there, and also we have a report of the Mangaung oversight visit that we conducted. Can you go through the report between now and then we adopt it in the next meeting, either the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development or the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations in one of those. So we give you time now to make comments to Grace and to Pega, one of them, and then they will consolidate those decisions and circulate to other members, and other members can comment on your own comments, and then we have a final report. That will be, as you know, that this afternoon we'll be dealing with the reports from other committees. The instruction from the House Chairperson and Chief Whip is that let's fast track all the reports now so that we can away with them. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
I have a special announcement out of the meeting that a disciplined ANC former Premier resigned. He did not take the APP to call to resign. So.
The meeting is at 10. Thank you very much.
No.